this afternoon for the sermon, just wondering, have you found the world in the last couple of weeks a bit confusing? Maybe it'd be more appropriate to say, have you found the world very confusing with what's been going on? I think confusing is a better word for what describing what has happened, especially in the last couple of weeks internationally. Maybe even mind-blowing, at least if it would be allowed, mind-blowing, or maybe unparalleled, at least in our lifetime, unless you happen to be around 90 years old and can remember what maybe parts of World War II and what happened immediately after World War II, that what's going on and what has happened in the last couple of weeks has not occurred in all those years. And I think we can realize that what has happened could very well be affecting our lives in the near term as well as the long term. So this afternoon, I'd like to review some of the recent, I would say, world history and the notable events that have happened in recent days and put them in a context of the history, if you will, in the context of the Bible, and talk about how we should respond personally to what's going on. And if you want a title for it, maybe a purpose statement, is Surviving a World in Chaos. Surviving a World in Chaos. So again, let's spend a few minutes reviewing the very recent past couple of weeks, and again, put them in these events in the context of the last few months. Now, with the emphasis that we place in the church and God through His Bible, through His Word, with the emphasis we put on watching, we talk about watching quite often. And a lot of things have happened in the last couple of weeks. So in doing that, this idea of looking at what's going on should not be a surprise to anyone. The events of the last couple of weeks are tied really to two items, I think, if it's fair to say, that had their advent over the last 4 months. And maybe, as I did, I didn't even take note of one of them 4 months ago. That is a real issue now that in the last couple of weeks. And that is the establishment of our president, President Trump, of what he calls the Board of Peace. That was actually announced in September. And then the organization behind it and they say the purposes of it and all that were fleshed out and was to be actually started this month, and in particular, just prior to what was referred to as the International Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And so there was an idea of creating an organization that would help augment peace and deal with areas of strife around the world. Initially, the focus was on Gaza and rebuilding Gaza and setting up a government there that would be would actually work, which is a pipe dream. But anyway, that was the initial the advent of it. But then it was expanded, and I'll read it a little bit about that in a minute with the actual statement of it. And then recently, in the last couple of weeks, was our president's push to have or to take control of Greenland, which was, you'd say, an international political earthquake of sorts. That the announcement of what we needed that as a nation for security, and there was really no reason for anyone to stand in our way of doing that. And Mr. Trump made that announcement. And I will go ahead and read, if I can find it here, this Board of Peace statement in my papers. And and I won't read it. Too many papers. But the Board of Peace, what he did was he set up this organization, and what each country was invited to do, would join, would cost $1 billion. You know, what he was going to do with that money, or who knows how it would be planned. And there was some thought that he would be the only person that could veto any activity, any program. And one can only imagine the kind of thought that it was for the international. But there were 80 nations, I think, that were initially invited. And in Switzerland, Davos, Switzerland, at this forum, about 20 signed up. But there was at least one notable discussion, and maybe two of them, that in the forum, because this was an economic forum, but what it turned into was a political show from Mr. Trump as well as other nations. It turned into much of a political event, far more so than the economic forum. Into what I could read about it, little of information about the economic part, other than that the politics associated with it. So he was overseeing Gaza, and then he announced that a couple of weeks ago that he wanted control of Greenland. And as I said, that was a major hiccup, if you will, in the international setting, and that really no one should stand in the way of that. And if anybody did, NATO, there were countries in NATO that took exception, that if anybody did, that he was going to set up major tariffs against our allies. Allies that emerged with the United Nations and even more beyond the United Nations after World War II in the establishment of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And as a country, we supported that in order to set up a perimeter against the Soviet Union. And we were going to unilaterally tell them that we would, if anything were in Europe were to be attacked in NATO, that the United States would intervene. And it would be a bulwark. And so the idea was if he did not get what he wanted, that he would use even force to take Greenland. Now, those were only words, apparently, and I'm not speaking ill in this sense of our president, but just a matter of what transpired. And we know that a lot of times he makes some bold statements, and then when he doesn't get quite what he wants, but he people will negotiate, then he backtracks. So sometimes the initial statements are establishing a beachhead that will bring about negotiation. And sure enough, one of the NATO executives in conference, they negotiated, and so Mr. Trump backpedaled, if you will, pulled back and said, no force, and we have established a framework of what we can do. Now, that's beyond, if you notice, that the United States already has a major military base in Greenland. And he wanted more of it. He wanted more unilateral control of that. So the military force, the initial threat against an ally. Now, think about that for a moment. Because one could say, well, they always take Mr. Trump at his first words. But also, I think he's established the fact that, well, maybe. Maybe. He will do some of the things that he comments on doing it. So the idea of then major tariffs and the economic impact of that resulted in Wall Street. I think I read one article said that the Wall Street convinced President Trump that this was a bad idea, more so than anybody in the political arena out of NATO and out of Europe. that all of a sudden the economy could be dramatically impacted, and the people over those organizations, you know, said, "What? That's a matter of money now. This is not going to work," and got the message to him. And I guess the other thing that came out of it was, I think we know, we've seen the fact that there is some discord between Canada and the United States. And so the Canadian Prime Minister, Mr. Carney, in Switzerland, managed to voice the fact that this was a really bad idea, and we shouldn't do that. And so as soon as he did that, the next day, President Trump disinvited him from joining the Board of Peace, you know, that he was no longer welcome, even if he had $1 billion. But Mr. Carney didn't want to do that. So, but the point was, this is creating a political firestorm of sorts, if you will, with our allies. So he met with the leader from NATO, and getting this framework of discussion or negotiation where he could get the kind of control he wants out of Greenland, he thinks, that he agreed, well, no, there will be no levies on tariffs, and there will be no force asserted by us, no arms. And sure enough, the next day, Wall Street recovered. So the idea is all these things bandying about, and to what I said, you know, what do we think about that? How much notice do we take? And there are those who are suspicious that this Board of Peace that Mr. Trump said would be the greatest assembly of leaders ever. And so why wouldn't anyone want to be a part of that? And that's not viewed that way on the part of others. So the issue that comes out of this is that all this potential fracture is sort of like watching, you know, you these earthquakes that happen. You know, the geologic people see the cracks in various parts of the nearby territory, and it's a warning sign that maybe there's about to be an earthquake. And if you've ever been through an earthquake, you'd understand that you would take notice that if there's something, if you're anywhere nearby where you lived was getting cracks in the earth, you'd think that you would watch anyway. So what remains from that, in my mind, and I think we should take notice, is that how much trust was destroyed by that ploy. And I use the word ploy. I don't know that's meant to be negative, but when with the threat of using force against a military and economic ally, even though you backpedal the next day, would one forget that? It creates a matter of distrust. And for the European Union and NATO in particular, that the idea that if this Russia were to go after other parts of NATO, that they could not count on the United States to intervene. And so then what would happen is they have to maybe alter course and do other things. And so when I talked about what do we think about that, it's back and forth. For me, it's sort of political whiplash. You look one way, and all of a sudden you think, well, you worry about it, but the exact opposite seems to occur. And these events, I think, are stunning. A clear threat to our issues in the world and what might happen. Now, and just looking at those events all by themselves in isolation, that doesn't take into account what's still going on in the Gaza. But how many of you noticed the headlines aren't all that big about Gaza? And yet it's not been resolved, and that's not being talked about. Nothing as specific about Iran, although there is an armada of sorts United States Navy going toward Iran with the, I guess, less than subtle threat from President Trump that they could very well intervene again and bomb Iran, naval forces. Still a lot going on, and maybe not the headlines quite so much, with China, and the controversy in the South China Sea, and the potential that of Taiwan and trade tariffs there imposed. We have these ongoing issues with Mexico and drugs, and Venezuela of late. That's a but that shows that Trump doesn't always just speak words. Sometimes, given enough time, he intervenes, and so that was that's a big deal. And right now, Ukraine issue, there's a three-way peace conference going on where it's Zelensky, president of the of Ukraine, and Russia, and the United States. And the issue with that is Zelensky says he has one thing that is just can't be negotiated. That's security. And Russia, Putin says, there's one thing that will not be negotiated. That is, Ukraine has to give up two pieces of their territory toward their country that Russia does not currently control. And if that can't be negotiated, there'll be no peace. So I don't know if it's two ships passing in the night, that what might happen there. So the demands are there. And if they negotiate it to the point, Zelensky says, okay, that's security. Are we going to believe that? That Putin is not going to get just because he says he would agree to that? The volatility of the world and these things we should take note of. So I would have to think that, but I ask, would anyone trust Putin? Would NATO trust Putin? Would Europe? And again, knowing that if something were to happen, maybe the United States would not back them up. I don't know. I mean, I read one article a couple of days ago about Putin has a sort of a private counselor, a philosopher sorts, and I forget his name. But the article that was big was that his comment, and he deals directly with Putin, apparently, that Putin should ignore international law, as if he hasn't. But ignore international law and take control of eight countries to the east and southeast of Russia. They were formerly a part of the Soviet Union because they need to do that. That world, he says that eventually you'll have three forces in the world. You'd have Russia, Soviet Union restored, if you will, China, and the West, but in particular the United States. That so therefore Putin should take charge of that. So in one commentary that I read talked about this crack in NATO. They said what Trump had been able to do, or what he did, was achieve for Putin over Russia what he really wanted more than anything else was the Europe separated from the United States. Then he could be, if you will, free to do whatever he would choose to do. So it's the idea of what's happened in the last couple of weeks, tied back again to the last 4 months on this in Greenland. I think for us, brethren, it's a big deal. I talked about things we had not mentioned. We mentioned Greenland. But I found another article of thinking what might Trump be interested in doing now? That is he interested in intervening in Colombia? He's threatened that already because that's where a lot of drugs. But he's also had he's not ashamed or to say this. He's not afraid to directly mention individuals, and he has threatened the leader of Colombia. That it won't be long. He's not going to be doing this very long, which is the point that whatever the president is doing. I mentioned Iran, which obviously is a threat to happen almost any time. And about Mexico. And then the surprise was that very likely, the next thing Trump would want is control of Cuba. That he would intervene there in order to, for security reasons. And, you know, if it, one of the things that is very obvious, he's already told Cuba that they will not be getting Venezuela oil. Because Venezuela oil has been given, I think I've read, I'll quote the number, but 35,000 barrels a day. And Cuba is already on in terrible shape. But that's it, sort of a stranglehold on the country. And, of course, Trump's old enough to remember Bay of Pigs under President Kennedy, and most of us are. But in getting all of that, you indulge me going through all of that, because we do need to watch. And if we see these things happen, just the threat of force over Greenland, the threat that NATO might divide, we know what God says about going to happen in the long run. There's no one in this room, and I don't think anybody that I know of, and a couple of people in our congregation here, that could remember World War II. I can certainly remember the Vietnam War when I was going through high school and beyond. But international war, such as World War II, maybe even the Korean, they called the Korean War, I've heard it, Korean conflict. But that was a pretty major deal in the Vietnam War. That these things don't necessarily shake us the same way we think about World War. But with what's going on in Europe and Russia and the Middle East, these things, I wonder if any of us, we're human. So I wonder if any of us find this a little bit unnerving. What will happen to the United States? What will unfold for us individually as well? I don't think we're uneasy physically, and yet spiritually. We know what the Bible forecasts and prophesies. So we realize that eventually what's going to happen, and we have to be prepared. So my comments, we'll go through this in the context of Scripture. And again, first of all, we shouldn't be surprised. And one of the notes I've sent out recently for the congregation here is I talked about the fact that we have to learn to expect the unexpected. There's no way for us to forecast and really know all of the things that just could come out of nowhere, so to speak. And some of those surprises from our government. And we happen, as a nation, we're politically very much divided. And with some of the things that we're doing, what we see going on in Minneapolis, and the issues there, which is so volatile. And it seems like any number of hot spots could pop up in our country at almost any time. And our country could have some major issues in short order. So first of all, we should not be surprised because we know. Let's turn over to Matthew 24. Well, a few scriptures. To remind us that this should not be a surprise. Matthew 24, verse 3. Says, now as he, referring to Christ, sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So they were asking, knowing that what he had told them would happen and could happen, give us a better idea, give us more information. Then in verse 5, he says, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Now, that will be more so at the end of the age, but we already know it started in the first century A.D., right after Christianity, the true Christianity started with the beginning of the church. But the Bible study we're going through recently here at headquarters in 1 John, that they were false teachers, many false teachers, by the late first century. So this idea that I am the Christ and a false Christianity and false truth, if you will, was going to be preached, came to pass. But say they'll deceive many. That was going to happen and maybe reach its zenith at the end of the age. But then in verse 6, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So Christ himself tells us to not be troubled. But it would be human to be troubled. Now with God's Spirit and under our understanding, we have to just be careful that we don't allow these things to trouble us. So that's in our reaction to what we see all around us is should not be surprising, and it should only confirm what we've come to believe by the fact that God has called us. So see that you're not troubled. All these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, earthquakes in various places. Verse 8, and all of these are the beginning of sorrows. Now, at the beginning, you know, all there have been lots of terrible things happening down through the last two millennia. But if we look at the history of what it's been for the last two millennia, and Christ is saying, particularly, here's what's going to happen at the end of the age, so we're talking about a lot of troubles, a lot of issues, a lot of wars, famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. So these things will be greater in number than what has been historical up to this point. All these are the beginning of sorrows. And then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Have we experienced that? Not really. Not the way it's talked about. That how many of us are being killed. There are various spots around the world. There may be more troubles. But for most of us, that's not, simply not the case. And you'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. I don't think that the living church of God and God's church is particularly hated by all nations. Something is yet to happen. It's to bring these things to fruition. Verse 9, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. But then in verse 10, as these things multiply and increase, and then many will be offended and will betray one another and will hate one another. We don't want that reaction. But God does, Christ says, it will happen. And then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, more so than usual. But there are hundreds of them now already, and maybe thousands of them across our country and in the world of Christianity. So that these false prophets will rise up, be more noticeable, and which obviously would be instrumental in creating animosity for the truth. But also because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. So just the degradation of our society and our peoples and our world, that's going to negatively influence some of the people in God's church, God's way of life. Verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. And we are doing that to the best of our ability right now with the resources we have, the means we have. And you know, we know how many people, we can get an idea of how many people watch the telecast. That's still, the most obvious thrust of preaching the gospel. We publish a magazine that about 350,000 or so right now subscribe to it, have major articles that explain the truth. And it's also a given that the easiest way to reach the world right now is via digital means. And Mr. DeSimone, that gave the announcements, he's the manager over all that resource of the studio and coordinating that. And the idea that maybe right now it's in hundreds of thousands are aware of us on the web, but he says we're going to be hated by all nations. The most likely way we're going to reach the world with the gospel is through digital means. until the point that God will intervene, and there'll be a certain means by which a couple of individuals can reach the world in a way we can't right now. But the idea that we can reach the world by hundreds of thousands right now via the internet, and so we have major programs designed for that. And of course we have the YouTube station, if you will, channel, that people can go to any time and come across that and find all kinds of sermons and telecasts from the past that we should be praying that all that will come to pass. But he says it'll be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. So we should not be surprised by any of this. And, of course, we go back to verse 6, talks about these rumors of wars. Yeah, that's all around us, one way or the other, whether it be literal war in the Middle East or in Ukraine. But also that we talk about the war on drugs. I think one of the, maybe it's the, I'm not sure now, but maybe the president of Mexico made some comment that there's war on that, and if that's a matter, but all these rumors are all around us. In 2 Timothy, chapter 3, verse we turn to real often to describe our world today, and in the last days, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, says, "But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come." And we do believe we are in the last days. With all that's going on in the world, and all the things the Bible reveals to us, that we are in the last days. Now, I've been around a good number of years now. I began attending church in 1965. And we were quoting this scripture. But in the scheme of things, of it, the way God looks at it, and the fact that if we talk about 6,000 years, the last days are still here. And they could have started before now, per se. So perilous times will come, and men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good. And we talked about this, slanderers and unforgiving and lack of self-control. Watch our news. What's going on in our country? That fits very well, this idea of being unforgiving and being radically opposed to what the government is doing. And not that they're always wrong, but just the volatility of it. And the actions and the brutality of it, the despisers of good, they're traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of good. And then along with all the things that are negative about our country, there are people who still find a way to be lovers of good. And so this talks about the end of the age. Perilous times will come. Over in John 16, John chapter 16, verses 32 and 33. And here, just before the last Passover, Christ is talking to his disciples. And they have professed to believe in him. And he asks, "Do you believe?" And why he asks that is because of what is about to happen. Verse 31 says, "Do you believe?" And 32 says, "Indeed, the hour is coming, yet has now come, that you will be scattered." Because he just asked them, "Do you believe?" And yet they said, "Yes." But he knows that what's about to happen will test that. "Each to his own, and will leave me alone, and yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me." He said, "These things I've spoken to you," what he's been talking about in John 14, 15, 16. "These things I've spoken to you, that in me you may have peace." That it will be that what Christ has taught them will resonate and give them some sense of peace. amongst themselves. And in the world, you will have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So another statement that applies to us, where he said, not to be troubled. Know that God's in charge. And he says, you'll have tribulation. That's what's going to happen, but don't be too concerned. Be of good cheer, because I've overcome the world and I will help you. In essence, he's saying, I've overcome the world and I will help you do the same. So he's giving them comfort, at the same time giving them a warning. So as the prophecies of these last days begin to be fulfilled and have been being fulfilled for some time, but as it proceeds and hard times will come. And what we think of hard times, sometimes if we put them in perspective to what's prophesied, it's easy times. We have our personal trials. We have our illnesses, but as a society, we're going through somewhat easy times. There will be situations or conditions, if you will, that we simply won't be able to avoid. There won't be any way around dealing with the crises that will come about. Over in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, and Paul's writing to the Thessalonians and giving them some encouragement, because he had only been there for a short time before he had to leave, and he couldn't teach them and tell them everything he needed to know, they needed to know. But in verse 1 he says, therefore, when we could no longer endure it, finding out how well they were, what was going on with them, we thought it good to be left in Athens alone. So talking about him and several of the people with him. And we sent Timothy back, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and encourage you concerning your truth. So to go back and to augment the things that Paul had taught them and establish them, strengthen them. Verse 3, that no one should be shaken by these afflictions. For you yourselves know that we are appointed to this. For in fact, we told you before when we were with you, that we would suffer tribulation. That Paul had managed to get that across to them. So again, they shouldn't have been surprised. And he said, we told you this, and just as it happened, and you know. So these things, we've been told the same thing. But I don't think we should or need to dwell on it. But when they do come to pass, when they do happen, then we shouldn't be surprised. And we should know that we be prepared for it emotionally and spiritually by staying close to God and knowing that he has promised these things. Over in Luke 21, verse 17, just the one verse. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, because of what we believe, because we are Christians, true Christians, hated by all for his name's sake. Now, that means widely. Now, we may have relatives that hate us because of what we believe. Divisive, in a sense that what one person is called and one person isn't, one mate. And depending on the situation, there may be some real open animosity about it. It could be children lose their parents over it. I've seen that. Young people called, and their parents basically disowned them. But to be, he talks about hated by all, that hasn't happened yet. But if we're, as we become better known, one way or the other, with whatever is going to come about, with the violent political protest we see over some of the problems that we have. And you know, we saw the things recorded in the New Testament in Christ's time, and even when Paul going out, what mob mentality will do to create persecution. Stephen was stoned because just an uproar. Somebody would say things loud enough and incite others, and people just forget themselves. And these things could happen. So we're hated by all, and it says, for his name's sake, for Christ's sake. So these things could happen to us. In Ecclesiastes, I won't turn there. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 14. It's just kind of what we are right now. In a sense, it talks about God does two things. He provides prosperity, and he also provides adversity. He allows for both. And for many of us, the prosperity that God has given us, we're experiencing right now, is not something we want to hang our hat on forever. Eventually things will change. In Romans chapter 12, Romans chapter 12, verses 10 through 12. Romans chapter 12, verse 10. If I got this right. Romans chapter 12, verse 10. Be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, and rejoicing in hope. And then to be patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, which is probably the key for all the preceding comments, is being steadfast in prayer, but to be patient in tribulation. Now, when things, when we're sick and we want God to heal us, hurry up. Do this quickly. Do it right away. And we know it doesn't happen that way very often, but we do hope that God will intervene and maybe lessen the pain quickly. And I think most of us have actually seen that happen on more than one occasion where God does intervene immediately, but being patient in tribulation. Now, when it's some of the things we find that are, say, inconvenient, and maybe distressing, and we realize we need to be patient. But when things are critical, we do ask God to intervene. And even when things are critical and big, we're supposed to be patient and relying upon those things. That some things are easier and some things are not. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 26 and 27. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, and all the members should rejoice with it. And now you are the body of Christ and members individually. I bring that in because it also mentioned in the verses we turned to a moment in Romans 10 through 12, to help one another and serve one another. And so we go through this and think about how we react and what in our thoughts over what's gone on in the world. What about our brethren elsewhere? Now, we're going to have the fast next week, and there's a specific purpose for that, of being aware that we have brethren around the world who are experiencing some of these things in their lives that we're talking about and what God said would happen to us. And our brethren in Myanmar, I don't know. I just can't get in my head figure out what would I do if I had to go flee my house and go somewhere up in the woods in order to obey God. What would I take with me? I don't have a sleeping bag, so what would I take? What's it like for mom and dad to take their children and simply leave all of their possessions in order to obey God and ask God to take care of them? And there's only so much we can do from here. There are some things we can do. We're trying. But to get international help has its limitations. What would we do? And do we feel for those brethren? They believe the same things you and I believe. And so we can pray and ask God to take care of them and provide them relief and provide deliverance from that. What about Jamaica? There, you've seen the pictures of what it was like after the hurricane went across. Some of us have been through hurricanes. I've been through a couple of hurricanes. One at home, one while I was traveling, but it's a bit frightening. What I remember was hearing with hurricanes are like a train going through your living room. That's pretty much it. When it struck in Houston, Texas, at midnight, and the lights went out, and you're sitting there in the dark, and it sounds like a train going through your house. When the winds were blowing about 105 miles an hour, people in Jamaica, brethren in Jamaica, apparently not physically, but they suffered damage. And what it's like to rebuild a home when there's no home, but to start over again, if you will. Haiti, I've talked to Dr. Pierre on multiple occasions. He and I worked together in Florida for a number of years. What it's like to live there where you're basically unsafe to go out on the street a lot of the time because of the gangs that control neighborhoods, how you negotiate that freedom to move around and get what you need to live. And, of course, we do have brethren in Venezuela. I don't know how many, but apparently they're safe. But, again, with the fact that when you take away government, and there's some control there, but basically you're going to have groups of people controlling the certain areas. You'll have gangs in the streets. And I've not seen the movie, but there was a movie. But there was a time in New York that for an ethnic issues or nationalistic issues with different parts of the some of the immigrants and from countries would gather in certain areas, and there were gangs in New York fighting for control in the city. And there are certain immigrants in the United States who would like to do the same right now, coming from foreign countries and have their domain and basically telling the local authorities to keep out. We will govern ourselves, and it's not safe to go there. Venezuela, that could happen very well. Situation, and there are others. We have brethren in Colombia. We have in South America and elsewhere. We have brethren, a lot of brethren in Mexico, and that as a nation, they've got their problems. And so our awareness of that, say that one suffers, we all suffer. And we don't physically suffer, but emotionally and spiritually, we have to keep them in our minds. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, a couple of verses that I personally find beautiful and encouraging. We all, how many favorite scriptures we have. We don't have just one. We have a bunch of scriptures that mean a lot to us. And for these two resonate with me. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. It says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort." He's the Father of mercies. This idea of being merciful is just, God is. That's the way He's always been. And it's what He, if He's the Father of it, it's what He's sharing with us. And the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our tribulation. And why? That we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble. And the margin for that talks about tribulation, in any trouble, with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. And so if He's the Father of all comfort, Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, it's something He's sharing with us through His Spirit. And so our reaction to this is to learn from whatever we experience, is to incorporate these very traits of our Father and of Jesus Christ so that we can do these things. We can comfort others. We can reach out to them. We can pray for them for fervently and sincerely. So these things are not a surprise. We know they're going to come in due time. So and how well do we plan for it? Over in 2 Peter chapter 3. Verses 10 through 12. I mean, this verse we use, but and it's ever present, ever truthful. "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with a fervent heat, or with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. And nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." So this is speaking specifically of the end of the day of the Lord. But the warning about the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night is one of those things that we know that certain things have to happen. There are certain prophecies that we don't see how they're going to happen, that will come to pass in the next few years, at least. And yet when it does come, we're going to be surprised. The world will be surprised. He comes as a thief in the night. And so that, and the point there is, then knowing that, then we're prepared at any given time to stay close to God, until we're diligent and to the point without spot or blemish. In verse 14, it says, "Therefore, beloved, looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found by Him in peace, without spot, and blameless." So we take care of our spiritual priorities so that we are prepared, we're ready at any time. The world talks about this in a different verbiage, but the reality is still the same. So how we react, how are we reacting? It shouldn't be terror. It shouldn't be fear, but it does unnerve us a little bit to maybe ask ourselves, am I ready? Am I right now ready if something were to happen of severity and difficulties? And yet not to be terrified. Let's turn over to John 14. And when I read this, I do think about the fact that there are people who deal with, and I don't know if anybody's present, but I don't know that I've dealt with it because I have anointed people for it, that have panic attacks because of any number of environmental, let's say their environment situations, that they just the panic attack, in which it basically it immobilizes some people. And I've never quite seen that, but I've heard of it. But the panic attacks, and the other times it just I just have dread because of circumstances. But John 14, verses 27 through 29, has a statement that is a promise and going parroting Mr. Ames, something we need to pray for and ask God to give us, because Christ said he would. Verse 27 says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." So that's a promise that God, through his Spirit, he will give us peace of mind and peace of life, if you will. Now, he tells them this because they still don't quite realize he's going to die the next day. And as prepared as he could get them to be, I'm sure they felt comforted by what he said, but knowing that once it actually happened, because when he was arrested that night, everybody fled. They were scared. But he gave the peace I leave with you, not as the world gives. So this was something God gave him. He knew that, in fact, in due time, in the next few days, the next few weeks, this peace would set in. When they saw him resurrected, things would change. Verse 28, "You have heard me say to you, I am going away and coming back to you. If you loved me, you would rejoice because I said, I'm going to the Father, and my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it comes, that when it does come to pass, you may believe." So once he was resurrected, I'm sure these words resonated in their minds. This was what Christ was talking about. He was about to die, and 3 days later he was going to be resurrected, and we would find him, and then he'd be with us for the next 40 days or so, just before Pentecost. And the gift of God's Spirit, he'd be with them. And so this peace of mind that I give to you, we should pray earnestly for that. When we see the things that might rob us of peace, we need to ask for God to remove that and give us his peace. He said, "I give you." It's a different kind of peace. It's like sometimes a parent talking to a child is, "Calm down." That may or may not work. But anyway, what God will do is give us the peace that we need. So, and we come right down to it, with whatever happens to us, whatever happens in the world, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? Let's turn back to John 6. John 6, verse 65. Of course, we know here in John, Christ is talking about eating the bread of life drinking the blood of life, and people are just stunned by what's he mean by that, and some left, some didn't follow him anymore because what he said was so inhuman, it was so drastic, so dramatic, they just couldn't accept it and walked away. And so, in verse 64, he says, "There are some of you who do not believe," and because he knew that he was going to be betrayed. But 65, he says, "Therefore I have said to you that no one comes to me unless it has been granted to him by my Father." From that time many of his disciples went back and walked from him no more. And then Jesus said to the 12, "Do you also want to go away?" And Simon Peter answered, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." So where would we go? When the going gets tough, where would we go? There is no place else to go but to God. Turn to him Ask for Him for strength. Ask Him for the peace of mind, because we've been given the words of eternal life. Verse 69, also we've come to believe and know that You are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And so we need to remind ourselves, these are things we know. And so whatever happens, to try ourselves to mentally prepare, emotionally, spiritually prepare for difficult times. There's enough going on in the world right now. I just personally think, expect the unexpected. So many things can change so radically, so quickly, that we need to be able to foresee that and know that when it does come to pass, we go back to the Bible and practice what He says. And in thinking about this and in the sermon recently that Mr. McNair gave on, we're not citizens of this world. Our citizenship is in heaven. It's not yet on earth here yet, but the citizenship's in heaven is going to be given to us. And he just went through three things about the jury. We don't vote. Things we don't do because we're not citizens of this world. And our citizenship is in heaven. And so these ideas that the things that are going on around us, it's not our world. It's not our country. We're living in a different world spiritually. Physically, God says to Christ, I don't take them out of the world, but I want you to watch over them and take care of them. So we're living, if you will, in an alternate world, at least spiritually in that sense, if I can put it that way. And in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 26 through 28, Hebrews 12, 26 through 28. Breaking into the middle of the thought. Verse 26 says, and whose voice then shook the earth, referring to God and referring to Christ. But now He has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only the earth, but also heaven. Now this yet once more indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. So, talking about a new heavens and new earth. Verse 28, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, this kingdom of which we'll be citizens, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. So we devote ourselves to practicing God's way of life, serving Him, doing what's right in His eyes. Let's turn back to, I'm going to read parts of a couple of Psalms as we close. But in Psalm 31, David's prayers, and of course he wrote these songs, recorded them, but they are prayers. They're thoughts, they're meditations, but things we can read these and find them very comforting, but also instruct us and be instructed about what kind of attitude we need to have in the midst of a world of chaos. We will have to, how to survive a world of chaos. Psalm 31, verse 3, for You are my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for Your name's sake, lead me and guide me. And the word for rock in a lot of the places in Psalms, it's in Hebrew, but it's similar to the word Petra. It talks about, it means big rock. It means, there are multiple words, but many of them are, and I'm not sure about this particular one, but I know it, one of the, part of the, of chapter 1, that, or 31, 27, I'm sorry, it does say it, it is word is rock or cliff. Talking about what, similar to the word Petra in Greek. Verse 5, into Your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me. O eternal God of truth. In verse 7, I will be glad and rejoice in your mercy, for you have considered my trouble. You have known my soul in adversities. You're aware of what I'm going through. In the last part of verse 8, you have set my feet in a wide place, which means a smooth plain, in a sound setting, not a rocky place, nothing difficult, is a wide place, smooth. Verse 9, have mercy on me, O Eternal, for I am in trouble. Something we can say to God whenever our troubles beset us. And then in verse 11, it says, I'm a reproach among all my enemies, but especially among my neighbors, and am repulsive to my acquaintances. Those who see me outside flee from me. And he goes on then that, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong one. Verse 16 says, make your face to shine upon on your servant. Save me for your mercy's sake. And reading verse 16, I don't know whether it's been played out, sent out, don't recall. But we had a sermon a few months ago now, I guess, by Mr. Hernandez about God's face, seeing God's face, that represented his blessing. And he says here, make your face shine upon your servant. What he's saying there, just show your care and your love and your support. Make your face shine. God's happy and willing to do this. And save me for your mercy's sake. Then in verse 23, it says, O Eternal, O love the Eternal, all you His saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful. He will take care of us. Verse 24, be of good courage, and He shall strengthen your heart and all of you who hope in the Eternal. And then back in Psalm 27, Psalm 27, verse 1, we sing this psalm. The Eternal is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Eternal is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Verse 3, though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. And though war may rise against me, in this I will be confident. One thing I have desired of the Eternal that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Eternal all the days of my life, to behold the beauty, and the margin on that talks about the good things, but behold the beauty of the Eternal, and to inquire in His temple. From the time of trouble He shall hide me in His pavilion. In the secret place of His tabernacle He shall hide me. He shall set me high upon a rock. Again, that word, I do know that word there, is talking about a big rock, about a cliff. In verse 8, the latter part of verse 8, he says, when you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face eternal I will seek. And we're looking to God. Verse 9, do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not leave me, nor forsake me, O God of my salvation. In verse 11, teach me your way, O Eternal, and lead me in a smooth path because of my enemies. Do not deliver me to the will of my adversaries. Verse 13, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Eternal in the land of the living. In verse 14, wait on the Eternal. Be of good courage. He shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Eternal. So how do we react to the kinds of things that are happening to us? Yes, humanly we might be bothered, but spiritually, if we're close to God, He says He will give us strength. He will give us fortitude. He will see us through whatever is going to happen. This world of chaos is not going to get any less chaotic. It's just a matter of time. As things progress or degress, terrible times are coming. So I'd just like to close with how God closes this book. Revelation 22, verse 20. We have to look beyond what happens now and what's going to happen in the near future. We have to look beyond, even as we, so to speak, we have to look all the way to tomorrow, tomorrow's world. But verse 20, and he who testifies to these things says, talking about Christ, surely I am coming quickly. Now, gentlemen, John wrote this and recorded this vision. He had no idea there were two millennia ahead of him. But the message wasn't just to him. It was for us today. He who testifies to these things says, surely I am coming quickly. And what do we say? Even so, come, Lord Jesus. We want that day to come. The sooner the better. Even though we know there are some difficult times coming, we can still be optimistic knowing that Christ is coming.